Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. My name is Dave Kubikian.
Phil Vacchio.
Hey, oh, Phil.
There we go. We're back here.
Yeah. Okay. Your name is Phil Vacchio.
It is. The microphone wasn't working for a moment.
Yeah. That was me.
Okay, gotcha.
Hit the wrong button.
We're back.
After all these years, can you believe that?
Good morning, everyone. Phil and I are two of the attorneys from the Herzog Law Firm, and some combo of us is here every weekend talking to you about estate planning and elder law, wills, trusts, home care, care elsewhere, good stuff, the bad stuff.
Everything in between.
Everything in between. Call and show 518-476-5900. You can call with a question or a comment or a thought or whatever. You could also reach Phil or I or Jay Marie in one of our four offices up in Queensbury, down in Kingston, in the middle, in Saratoga Springs, and here in Albany. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Dave.
You seem a little serious with this good morning. That was not a happy-go-lucky good morning there.
John. No.
That was a good morning.
Oh, good. Oh, good. How are you?
Very busy, Phil.
Very busy. Have you had any time to enjoy some March Madness, though?
You know what? It's funny you ask. I have not watched a minute of one game.
Really?
Not even the
first time in my life. I was working. I listened to the end of it.
Yeah.
I had it on in the big conference room.
Oh, nice.
So when I would walk past, I could see updates.
Yeah.
That's about it.
It's funny how it goes because, you know, there's whether it's, you know, whatever interest people have, you know, it changes over.
Yeah.
I used to be like, I need to watch at noon tip off and my brackets. I did the bracket like at 11:55.
Right before.
Yeah. I went with all the favorites. What am I going to do? Yeah. I don't know anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about anything.
Well, New York has four teams in the,
our alma mater, Hofstra University.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. They actually played a good first half.
The Johnnies.
Let it go.
Siena.
And LIU.
Mm-hmm. LIU.
Yeah, pretty impressive. I'm surprised.
You know, when we were younger, and it was probably when you were like a high school age and I was like college age.
Yeah.
That's, LIU was always in the tournament. St. John's was in there.
St. John's has always been
good.
Yeah,
historically,
year after year.
So no, but it's been incredibly busy, and you know, John, it's not just like about appointments, you know, we love appointments, that's great.
Sure.
But Phil and I have been, and we've been, you know, circumnavigating the entire capital region in Hudson Valley and North Country with speaking engagements and continuing education classes, which I had two this week.
Yeah, I had one. You had two.
You did a seminar the other day, and I thought it would be great if we just kind of reported back to the audience that, you know, what the mood of you know, your neighbors are, because we were getting lots of different questions about all sorts of things.
That's one of my favorite parts about the seminars are the questions people pose. You get to see what the hot topics are, what the concerns are for people out there. We talk about it every day, so we don't know, you know, what they're thinking about.
So I had two times I spoke, in both of them, I learned something, Phil. I don't know. Sometimes I learn something. I learned that there's a 7-year look back period. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, did someone say that with a lot of conviction to you, Dave?
One was, didn't they decide that they're going to do, it was one of those, the 7-year look back.
One of those days.
No, never heard that. But we actually hear that rumor a lot. So that was maybe just off the bat. 5-year look back period, meaning you got to plan ahead of time in the worst case scenarios where someone needs a nursing home, because when you apply for Medicaid to cover grandma's nursing home, mom's nursing home, Medicaid asks for the previous 60 months, 60, not 16, 60 months. And, you know, you got to plan ahead of time is what that means. But it used to be 3 years. Now it's 5. It's been 5 almost 20 years.
For a long time.
Actually, we passed the 20-year mark. I think it was February 1st of 2006.
Yeah.
And the reason why I know that, Phil, is because January of 2006 was like the craziest month that Herzog Law Firm prior to us joining, of course.
Yeah.
Because everyone was in there trying to get their ducks in order.
Yeah, that was the whole meltdown and So funny.
No look back. No 7-year look back. It's 5.
No 7. And funny, that was the first one on my list too, Dave.
It was.
Questions. Well, similar. What is the 5-year look back? it wasn't the 7 year, which ironically everyone thinks 7 years is the rumored number. I don't actually know where that rumor came from.
John, did you start that rumor?
Might have been John.
Don't look at me.
Put it out there in the public, smart. Spreading the rumors. But, there's no rumor.
You're just trying to get us more business and trying to scare people. Thank you, John.
Appreciate
not
that.
Me. No.
Yeah, so there's been no talk about increasing it in any kind of official capacity at all. It's 5 years still. And like you eloquently said, what does it refer to? You have to plan ahead and to beat this five-year look back. And it depends on how you look at it, right? You can look at it from a reverse perspective or a future planning perspective. What do I mean by that?
Yeah, go on.
Reverse perspective, how it is administered by Medicaid, if you ask for Medicaid to pay for your nursing home bill one day, and you apply for what we call chronic care Medicaid, as part of the application, we have to submit 5 years, 60 months of financial statements that shows every transaction that you or your spouse have made during that five-year period. So that's it, applying it retroactively from the date we're looking for care. From a planning perspective, if you look at it in reverse, we want to plan when we're young and healthy enough that we can create things like Medicaid asset protection trusts and fund them with certain assets that are in there, in that trust for at least 5 years before you or your spouse need that higher level of skilled nursing care. So whichever way it makes more sense for you and your brain, the audience, you could look at it both ways, but that's how the five-year look back works.
So Phil, you're saying that the sooner you do planning, the sooner the last 5 years doesn't matter anymore.
Correct.
So like if it's the year 2040, right, we're going 14 years ahead of time here, right? If you did a trust today, Medicaid applications in 2040 don't care about what you did in 2026 because it's more than 5 years ago.
Exactly right. And they look at the stuff that happened in between, right? So you want to be careful that you don't have some kind of activity coming out of the trust that voids the trust. And if you want to add additional assets to the trust at a later time, you have to understand that when that asset goes in, it's going to have its own five-year look back. It doesn't go back to when you formed the trust. So those things are important too. You can't just think, oh, I did my trust 20 years ago, but then you put a second house in there last year that you're good to go. That property is going to have its own five-year look back.
Yeah. So I didn't get the specific question, but I felt the need to really go out of my way to explain the next piece of what you were just saying, which is, well, okay, you're saying I should plan ahead of time. Got it. You're saying, you know, Medicaid's, long-term care is expensive. Got it. And you're saying I need to plan, you know, Dave just said 2040. That's 14 years from now. If I'm going to plan ahead of time, I better still be able to use my money. I better still be able to be in my own house.
Sure.
I don't know if I'm going to live here forever. Maybe I'll move. Maybe I'll downsize. Whatever, when you say planning, it needs to be in a way where I still have my autonomy to be able to control my destiny. This trust, that trust, whatever. I need to be able to control my life. And I feel like I was going out of my way in the presentations I had, Phil, to really make sure and really hammer down. When you do this Medicaid trust you were talking about,
yeah.
Yes, it's technically an irrevocable trust, but you can amend it. You effectively control it. If you want money to be removed from it, New York has a way for that to happen. You're still getting the STAR exemption. You're still at home. You control your destiny. And I feel like that piece is such an important piece for people to understand, because planning ahead of time, not at the cost of giving up control. No way. I'm not doing that.
Yeah. We know that that's one of the major concerns of many of our clients and one of the biggest deterrents that we see from people going the trust route of not understanding it. And again, we harp on this all the time. Whoever named it an irrevocable trust, I want to meet that person and have a conversation. We could have named it something a little softer, a little more, true to what it actually means. I mean, and the hard part too is there actually are some truly irrevocable versions of irrevocable trusts that we're not doing for many people at all. Very, 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 very rarely. The type of trusts we're doing are not truly irrevocable with the things that you mentioned. It brings me into one of the questions I got. I heard if you put property, a house or stock in an irrevocable trust, you lose what we call the step up in basis.
Oh, wow. You're going deep. I like it.
It was a good question that I got at one of the presentations I did, and what they're referring to is when you pass away, if your family or whoever inherits certain assets from you, like a house, they get a step-up basis to date of death value. So if they sell it thereafter,
yep.
Say you have a house, when you pass away, it's worth $300,000. You bought it 40 years ago for
$10,000.
Right, write these numbers down, Dave. Keep track here.
$300,000.
We're $300,000 to death. You bought it for $10,000 50 years ago, let's say.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
That's a big gain.
You know, I built the house, Phil. I bought the land and then I built the house. I have no idea. I have no receipts.
Yeah, or you don't
no
even
idea
know
how much I spent.
Right. Who knows what it's worth?
Yeah.
Who knows what I built it for? When you pass away, if you get the step up in basis, it's worth $300,000 to death. Your family sells it soon after for $300,000. That is a net zero capital gain, right? Because the IRS gives you a step up basis date of death value. If you did something that voided that option to step up the basis, in the example I gave, you'd be paying capital gains on $10,000 to $300,000, $290,000 of capital gains. That'd be a huge tax implication.
And I think the overriding idea of what you're saying is that when someone owns risk, John, you own a home, right? I own a home. Phil, you own a home.
Yeah.
And there's certain benefits that come with that. And if we're a certain age, not only can we qualify for the STAR exemption, we can get this enhanced STAR because of our age. If we were a veteran, we could get certain other kind of tax benefits associated with that. We get to sell our house whenever we feel like it, right? You control that. When you die, you were mentioning this step up in a tax basis. Just owning something, when you die, beneficiaries, are going to get this tax benefit, okay? Out there, just believe us on it. You got this tax benefit.
Yeah.
The key to what Phil is saying is that when you do a trust, the rules of the trust matter because there are some trusts that can eliminate some of these benefits that Phil was talking about. But the kind of trust that we tend to do most frequently, this Medicaid asset protection trust, it's a really specific kind of trust where you still get all the benefits of owning something, what you think it means to own something. So, Phil, what does it mean to own a house? It means I can live there, I get to pay all the bills, and I could get rid of that house if I wanted to. Check, check, and check on the trust. And because, Phil, you retain those powers still, we know that upon your passing, we still get those benefits as if you owned the house in your own name. And to us, this is like matter-of-fact conversations. For other people, they've heard from their neighbor, they heard from their, their financial advisor sometimes, they heard from their accountant. They've heard from the Google machine. They Googled irrevocable trust because of course you would, right? Dave and Phil are talking about irrevocable trust. Let me Google that. Wrong. It's too vague of a term.
It is.
You got to get really, down into the details of how a New York Medicaid asset protection trust can work.
There's so many intricacies and, what language does the trust have? Because that's incredibly important for how it's treated from a tax perspective and other perspectives. But part of that conversation we have with the clients, and it's a really important part of the conversation is, and I always tell people, you and your spouse, you guys come first, right? While you're here, I don't want to do anything that's going to negatively affect your lifestyle. That's my priority. I want you to live a happy life. You deserve that. If your kids don't feel the same way, then forget about them, right? That doesn't matter.
Yeah,
you come first. But I do understand at the same time, there is a strong goal for many people to protect assets. If I've worked hard my whole life, the idea of all my assets going to a nursing home or having to go back to the government is a pretty depressing thought. Right? Why did I do all this? Why did I save? I want to provide for my family one day rather than giving it all away. So it's a balance of those two things, preserving assets, living my life. And when we say live your life, live it on your own terms in total autonomy, unilateral control. Those are important for many people. And how do we achieve both things? And it is achievable.
I love it. We're going to continue to live our life in the second half of the show. We'll be right back with the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Show right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, Saratoga Springs, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
We're back. My name is Phil Vacchio.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kabikian.
And before the break, we were talking about some common topics that came up in Dave and my recent presentations and continuing education programs that we did over the last few weeks. A lot of good questions from the audience members. I always love that. I hate speaking in silence. I like the interactive approach. And I think both of us got a lot of that this past.
I don't like when people do their consult in the middle of the presentation.
Well, there's a little bit of that, too.
I don't like that.
You got to shut that down sometimes.
So what if your uncle, and it's like, okay, I feel like we're getting...
Just hypothetically.
Yeah, a hypothetical uncle, or is this a real uncle?
Yeah.
And I will say, for everyone out there, if you're listening, you know, you live in the area, every school district has some level of continuing education and take advantage of them. Because, you know, first of all, you could learn how to knit if that's your thing.
That's a good one.
You know, there's all sorts of different things you could do. Or you could learn about estate planning. It's weird. It's like all these craft type stuff.
And it's estate planning. Yeah.
But it's an hour or two. It's a small setting, and you just hear some information, you know?
Everyone,
it's a no-brainer.
Everybody needs to continue to be educated, and it's oftentimes enjoyable. You learn some new things and spread it to your family, right?
Yeah.
So we were talking during the break, Dave. I talked a little bit about this last week as well, but it came up during my presentation as well, and the idea of, adding a child or someone else to property, to assets, whether it's your bank accounts or in this particular situation to the deed for your house.
So you're saying, okay, I hear you, but you know what? I'm just going to give something to my kids now, or I'm going to add their name to something now.
Yeah, this sounds really easy. I heard I just add my kids to my deed. Why can't I just do that?
Phil from Long Island's back. You hear that? Well, he must have had a client from Long Island.
It may have been. Sometimes it comes out, John, still, no matter how much I try.
All right.
So we like, all things being equal, we like a piece of property going into a trust. And the reason why we like that, Phil, is because you retain in that property, it's literally written in the trust that we do, you retain a legal life use. It means, Phil, you get to stay in your house, you have exclusive use and occupancy. Not only that, you get to pay all the bills, Phil. Congratulations. You still get the star exemption. You can say, hey, trustee, I don't want to live here anymore. And that house will be sold. Mm-hmm. You have beneficial ownership of everything in this trust. You don't have technical, I'm the titled owner, because it happens to be in your trust, but it is your trust. There are people out there, Phil, that have LLCs that own rental properties. They don't own the rental property, it's their LLC. It's the same kind of idea.
Same idea, a separate entity.
And we like that life use because if you sell your house one day, why are you going to sell your house? Well, maybe I need a lot of long-term care. I can't do the stairs and whatever. When you sell your house, where does all the money go? Well, when you did this trust, the money stays in the trust. We'll talk later about how you get that money out if you want it, but the most important thing is the money stays protected.
Yeah, you keep it. Yep.
So if we sold it because you need long-term care, Phil, and it's going to be assisted living or nursing home or whatever, I want to know that trust I created 10 years ago that originally had a house now has the proceeds of the sale of the house.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know that money is just as protected as that house. And so the trust affords you that opportunity. Other options that you're about to talk about don't exactly work that way.
Well, listen, if you're going to do planning for someone and you have multiple options that achieve some of the same goals, right? So for example, we'll talk about the life estate deed in a minute. It achieves many of the same goals as a trust that we commonly do. But I have, you know, these multiple options and some options have a lot of risk associated with them, a lot of potential pitfalls. And another option does not have any of the associated risks that I'm going to talk about. Which option are you going to choose? I mean, to me, it seems like a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to do something that's going to have potential risk in the future? And hey, let's roll the dice and maybe it works out and you know, none of those risks come up, but why even take the chance?
Yeah. I'm going to swerve on you here because there are times where a trust isn't the right thing to do. And in one of the library seminars I did, there was a question about two of the things you're talking about. One is called a life estate deed, everyone, and the other one is called a transfer on death deed. These are deeds that both of them avoid probate.
Sure.
Okay. That's the real reason that they exist is to avoid probate. And that's fine if we're not worried about long-term care. But if you are worried about long-term care, we gotta do a little more than just avoid probate. So I like those kinds of deeds where maybe someone's at the end of the road.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're on their deathbed and we want to do something quick to avoid probate. There's certainly scenarios where that other type of planning is going to be appropriate. Absolutely. And we had a client recently that, well, it's almost this exact situation. You know, we're at the stage of life. I think there's one child in this scenario. Mom doesn't have much long to live, and, you know, Medicaid planning and all that's just doesn't make sense. Does one daughter do a transfer on death deed? It's quick, easy. You get it done. It's not expensive. And it makes sense there for different reasons.
And so if it makes sense there and it's going to avoid probate, okay, well, is there a way I can do this where it also helps with long-term care? There actually is. It's this thing called a life estate deed. And the reason why we tend to avoid them, unless it's that end of life kind of scenario that we don't worry about long-term care scenario.
Right.
The reason why we don't like those other kinds of deeds is because I need you to still be the boss. And Phil, when you do your trust, you control the fate of that property. You can decide that it's going to be sold. If your trustees don't listen, you can fire them.
Correct. Right?
You maintain this big picture kind of control, like a, you know, like an employer controls employees because they can decide who works for their business, like that kind of big, you know, overarching kind of control. So I want you to keep control. And the best example of this is that if I have my kids as my trustees and something bad happens in their lives, a disability, an incapacity, a death, divorce, bankruptcy,
they get sued in an accident,
none of that stuff impacts your trust because you still have the ability to remove them. They're not vested. And without getting into more detail on it, nothing of theirs affects your trust. Okay. When you do a life estate deed, it's literally a deed to your kids where you reserve certain rights. And all of a sudden, it means that if we do want to sell this house, I need my kids to sign on the dotted line.
Yeah.
They might not be willing or able to. They may have predeceased me and now my co-owners, my grandkids who are 2 and 4 years old or something like that. Mm-hmm. Not ideal. I don't like that at all. But the bigger thing is that when you sell a house in a trust, we kind of mentioned it, all the money from the proceeds stay in the trust, and then there's ways to remove that money if you need it and want it. When you do a life estate deed, guys, and it gets sold, there's a large chunk, probably a majority of the money, that's going to go to your kids and not to you. And that, to me, like in my own planning, Phil, that's a non-starter, right? I work hard. Down the road, I hope to have assets that I want to protect, and there's no chance I'm giving up control of those things. Isabel could call in right now and tell you I'm not giving up control about anything.
Well, and Dave, even if you have full, utter faith that they will give it back to you or use it for you if you need it, there's other implications too, right? Going back to the tax stuff that you love, we lose tax benefits as well.
If the clients out there that say, well, I hear you, but my kids and I have a good relationship and we're going to do it this way. God bless you. It sounds great.
Yeah.
You make an educated decision. Sounds great. I'm not going to keep talking until I'm blue in the face.
Sure.
We have seen, we do it every day. John, you wouldn't believe the kinds of fact patterns we've seen, the kinds of craziness that's gone on in families. And it's one of those things where if you're in a certain profession and you see how the sausage gets made or something like that, well, I'm not going to ever eat that again because now I know what went into that.
Right. I see.
Well, in a lot of those situations too, you talk to the client 10 years ago, they would have never fathomed that this would have been a situation that could have come up. If you ask them at that time, life simply changes. People come in and out of people's lives.
Yeah.
Well,
people change, right? You don't know or things happen that are outside of their control.
This is how crazy it is, Phil. There's a world where long-term care insurance companies raise their premiums to outrageous numbers, or maybe they go out of business.
400% increase or this or that.
That's a real world. So we're planning, if it's like, well, I already have insurance. It's like, well, do you? Are we sure that's going to work? Are you willing to take the risk? And by the way, Phil, it's okay if they say yes. That's fine. Educated decisions. We love educated decisions. Mm-hmm. But we just want to make sure people understand that the things that they think in life are guarantees. Nothing is a guarantee.
I'm not a gambling man by nature. I'm very risk averse. If you didn't know this, Dave.
How many brackets do you have in this NCAA tournament?
Only one. See?
One.
Not a gambling man, he says.
That's just for fun. Right. That's
okay.
Fun.
Yeah.
That's for fun. That's
you're not trying to win.
That's not a different kind of gambling. I'm not gambling with major life events here, Dave.
I understand. Right?
I can pay attention and have fun watching the games.
All right. Yeah.
Of course.
But we want to hedge our bets. We want to hedge our bets. We can't put all our eggs in one basket. We have this long-term care insurance. So my kids, our relationship is always going to be great. Nothing's going to happen to them. I don't like that approach for the most part. And again,
hope you're right. I hope that those clients are right, but you never know.
Yeah, and so do I. And a lot of times they will be. But do you want to roll those proverbial dice? Not I.
You're not a gambling man.
Not.
So, I think everyone gets it. There's pros and cons to any approach, and so cons when it comes to doing trust. Well, they cost more than just doing a deed. So I get the
upfront cost is a thing. Yeah. It's a factor, of course.
Yeah.
So we're not minimizing that by any means. But when you hear it and hear the pluses and minuses, you may think twice and not go the quote unquote easy cheap route. And then just to hammer down, because we kind of glossed over the transfer on death deed. That's not me even actually transferring the property to anybody. It's a way that New York State passed in just last year, I think, July of last year, June or July, for you to essentially put a beneficiary on your
deed. Nothing for long-term care.
Nothing for long-term care. It's just a mechanism in a very simplistic way. If I pass away, this person doesn't have to probate it. That's literally all it does. There's even, I don't know if it's case law yet or some rules out there that it doesn't prevent creditors from coming after it. Right.
Yeah.
Even though I avoid probate.
So it's brand new too. So we'll see.
We'll see. That also concerns me. I don't like things that are brand new that I don't fully understand because they haven't been fleshed out enough with case law and whatnot. So in my opinion, it does have very limited use at the present time, at least.
I've never used AI for anything or ChatGPT for anything.
You have, but you haven't realized that you did, I bet.
No.
Maybe not intentionally.
No. What do you mean? Unintentionally?
It's all over the place, Dave. You just didn't realize.
If I need to look something up, Phil, I go to the library.
No, you don't. Don't lie.
So we got a couple minutes left. There's one more thing that I really, really wanted to get. So a lot of times people say, because they hear, the pros and cons of the trust, and they say, okay, well, I'm just going to put my kids as beneficiaries on things.
Yeah.
And it might be the bank account, it might be a CD, it might be a brokerage account. And that's great for avoiding probate. And sometimes it's educating for the audience to understand that avoiding probate and protecting money while you're alive are two completely different things.
Yeah.
And you could have accounts that avoid probate, and that's wonderful. If you do have a lot of long-term care needs between now and your passing, there will be less money in that account that avoids probate.
Right.
Because none of that money is protected. So the way you avoid probate ends up being important. Beneficiaries on your bank, TOD on your bank account sounds great. TOD on your a beneficiary on your $350,000 brokerage account, well, also avoids probate. That's fine. I like rules on the money in case my kids predecease, get money to grandkids in trust and all that. But I want to just protect that money while I'm alive still. And and it's just this different, it's one extra step. And sometimes people will associate avoiding probate with protecting money, and it's just not true.
Or there's the other side. I want to also make sure my son or my daughter, whoever has access to the accounts during my lifetime, if I become incapacitated. So we have the avoiding probate side after I die. We have accessing it while I'm alive if they need to control things for me. And they say, well, I just put them on the account, which does serve those two purposes with risks. So power of attorney during life, beneficiary after death, no risk.
We got about a minute left here, John.
Not really, but okay.
30 seconds, I'm 20 seconds, seconds.
Five?
Well, John, you're not going to be with us every weekend going forward. I just want to say.
Here next weekend.
Oh, forget it then. I was going to say something nice
to
you.
Is next weekend the last weekend?
No.
All right.
No, that's fine. I don't want to say anything. Other than apparently Paul Simon is going to Tanglewood in June.
Oh, he is? Like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's on that list over there.
Nice. I should read it more often.
Take care, guys.
Dave.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.